carried many unanswered questions all our lives. Why did our parents let this happen? Why did this happen? Was I bad? Why don't my real parents come and get me? These are some of the questions that the survivors have asked through their lives, and even today. It's a struggle and an emotional journey for most SCOOP survivors trying to cope with the losses of identity and trying to find their families. Some survivors were united with family and found another painful experience with their biological families, finding out that they too were suffering from the impacts of residential school. That was another setback. These adoptees have been impacted. Other adoptees have been that were sent to the United States were deported back to Canada after 9/11. This was news to me. I didn't realize that. I found this out like just a couple of weeks ago, talking to my survivor friends on Facebook. They said that they're going through a lot of agony because they're being thrown out of the United States and they're being forced to come back to Canada. And in Canada, they don't know their roots. They don't know where they're from. So they're having a hard time dealing with that. Some adoptees have found family and some have found happy reunion, and that is good. I found my surviving family over 20 years ago. They were survivors of residential school. My highs of a happy reunion soon turned into grief. My family told me that my mother had been murdered. She is one of the 500 missing and murdered women. And there are other tragic deaths in the family. So it is hard for me to be close to my biological family. My family, my relationship with my birth family is mostly estrangement. But maybe one day we will mend the broken bridge that the government policy put in between me and my family. In conclusion, we are the 60 SCOOP generation reacting to the aftermath of assimilation government policies that has made our lives a struggle with the loss of identity, culture, and language. From 1965 to the 1970s, Native children were forcibly taken from their families for supposed better futures, for supposed better opportunities, for supposed better functional families. But that was not the case for most of the survivors out there. We stand up today together in solidarity to help ourselves and each other improve our lives towards peace and justice. I ask Harper to take more action to help Aboriginals remove our marginalization and make amendments with us, the 60s and 70s SCOOP stolen generation now. I dedicate this speech to all the Native children from the past, from the present, and from the future. May you all find your home in your hearts. Thank you.
Which end, the war we had. Here's something for you to remember that you're coming home.
Okay.
Our next speaker, Miigwech, and for that, that's a beautiful words, straight to the point. I like that. I would like to invite one of our leaders, a man I respect very much, to come on up, the Grand Chief Glenn Hare. He's with the Unit of Ontario Indians, and he has a message for us. So I'll let him talk about that, what he needs to do. Give a round of applause to Glenn Hare for all his hard work.
Hello everyone.
After I want you send a queen starve and guys in the kind of way in the starve and see, I'll take you some of sheep. You should get any been out here for the post was not much strong any books and them. It's not more young. Jungas don't want to walk scared to go much in yet. The starve been out here and you guys just take it. Good morning, everybody.
Morning.
I've been here so many times. And each time I do, I always hope that the people inside the building behind me hear us. I'm a dad, my wife and I. We'll be 37 years this year. We have 4 sons and 7 grandsons. Believe me, I will sacrifice to prevent a non-native society to ever touch any of my boys. They will not touch my boys. I always wish that they never touch any of our kids. Our kids, yes, they're precious. They're innocent. Not only Anishinaabe, all our kids, everybody's kids. We shouldn't be treating each other the way the society treats us, especially the Anishinaabe, us. Where they walk all over us so much. It's a money industry. I've seen it. I know the amounts. In fact, I believe there's a bill being talked about in this building behind me where there's three areas of adoption. There's private, public, and international. And there's also a dollar figure per child. Example, if somebody from Germany adopts one of our kids, there's $20,000 to $40,000 that couple that mother and dad can get. My God, our kids they're human beings, they're alive, they're not cars, they're not things. I hope that bill does not pass. Don't sell our kids. Don't sell anybody's kids. Yesterday we opened a center in Sudbury, the fetal alcohol syndrome heading our kids. We opened that center on behalf of all children, not just Anishinaabe First Nation, all children. That is the kind of work we need to do together. This afternoon, tomorrow, we're right now as we stand here, there's a Chiefs of Ontario Assembly held at the Delta Chelsea. And there's a resolution that's going to be proposed to the leadership, to the Ontario Chiefs tomorrow, and I'll read it here. And I support it, and it's time we take our own control, our own. There's a lot of people, non-native people, have been saying, I've been listening to them in the 25 years I've been involved. It's about time the Anishinaabe should do something for themselves. Well, when we want to, buildings like this stop us. So I'll read this resolution as it's being put forth before the Chiefs tomorrow. And I'm 99.9% it will go through. So here it goes. It's an inquiry into the Ontario Child Welfare. The Lake Huron Chiefs, the Anishinaabe Nation, and other First Nations have significant concerns with the Ontario Child Welfare System. The Anishinaabe Nation have been concerned with First Nation children being placed outside of our First Nation. And the Anishinaabe Nation will be developing protocols to ensure First Nation children are placed in First Nation homes. The service provided by Children Aid Societies is not consistent, and as a result, services which are provided in one region are not provided to the same degree or none at all in other regions, even though the Child Family Services is supposed to apply uniformly across the province. The Anishinaabe Nation and the Lake Huron Regional Chiefs are calling for a provincial inquiry into the child welfare, including consideration of inequitable funding and programming for First Nations children and families. Ladies and gentlemen, as a dad, as a grandpa, and each and every one of you, I again, for the umpteenth time, I ask you for your support for all our little ones. To get these guys, get these higher ups, Ottawa and here, to hear us.
We do. Don't sell our kids. We do want to take care of our own kids. Give us that opportunity. We have everything else in our community. We have education, we have social, we have administration, we got lawyers. Why can't we look after our own? We do everything else. So again, with all due respect, the moms, I'm glad the moms are here. You are the life givers. We stand behind you all every day, it's tough. But we can't quit and we won't. Miigwech.
He got a little bear. That's to remind him about that strength that he carries, Glenn here. Timmy, where's Glenn? Okay, where's the Alberta guy, my good friend, Steve Gold? Come on up here. Want to hear what Steve has to say? He came a long ways to come and share with us. And I had an opportunity to meet him at one of the conferences we had here in London a few months ago. So let's give a round of applause to Steve Gold. He traveled all the way from Alberta.
Right into that mic.
Om Janango Tsinia. Steve Gold Nitsikosun. My name is Steve Gold. I'm from the Om Janang First Nation, and I'm a survivor of the 60s scoop. I'd like to thank John for inviting me here today. These are important organizations. These are important gatherings for us. And the important part for us 60 Scoop survivors is the cultural part. I'd like to thank the elder, Rick, this morning that shared his pipe with us. I'd like to thank the drum for traveling down. I'd like to thank the women drummers and singers. I want to talk about ideas today. So I just wrote this speech here last night. It's on my phone and I think I can read it. So I'm gonna move on with that. That's okay. Today I wanna talk about an idea, because an idea can change the world. I don't wanna talk about people, although every one of us as survivors of the 60 Scoop, survivors of the child welfare in Canada, we have a story to tell. It's a deeply personal story. It's a story of resilience and it's a story of survival. These stories need to be told. When a bunch of us 60 Scoop survivors came together in Edmonton 5 years ago, 2006, when we came together and we realized immediately that we had to tell our stories. Through telling our stories together, we healed. We had been fostered all over the place. We had been adopted out into middle-class suburban houses, as I was. I grew up in suburbia. I don't tell any horror stories. I wasn't abused. I was raised well. I carry my dad's name. Alexander Walter Gold named me Stephen Gold, and I keep that name. I've been asked, since I've been returned to my home community over 10 years, I've been asked about changing my name back to my biological name. And to honor that big-hearted Scotsman that taught me the golden rule, taught me to navigate society today, I carry his name. But these stories need to be heard. Not just the stories that we need for healing, they need to be heard by other people. They need to be heard by the ministries. They need to be heard by the First Nations leadership. They need to be heard by the church groups. They need to be heard by the education people, and they need to be heard by health services. The critical mass that we developed in coming together had more energy than the sum of its parts. People and organizations wanted to hear our stories because we are survivors of a broken system. We have our experiences informing our ideas and how to fix it. We have ideas. We've been through the system and we have something to say about it. And it's those ideas I want to talk about, because an idea can change the world. I don't want to talk about events, although there are numerous measurable events in the history of the relationships between the Indigenous peoples of Turtle Island and the various newcomer governments. Many of these have had disastrous results in the lives of Indigenous children. We know those stories. And these events need to be talked about. In fact, this is the failure in the mainstream Canadian governance and Canadian education system. The historical events of the relationships between Anishinaabeg, Nehewan, Haudenosaunee, etc., and the colonial governments are not talked about. They're not taught. They're not taught in schools. This results in the complete ignorance of the larger Canadian public of historical injustices. This ignorance results in the denial of such injustices right up to the highest level of government. Prime Minister Harper in 2009 stood up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania and said Canada has no colonial history. If I were to talk about offense, I would talk about how Aboriginal child care in Canada has become a $3 billion institutional business by demonstrating that the 136-year cycle of legislative attempts and policy initiatives designed to solve the Indian problem. I could demonstrate that the raw resource for this multi-billion-dollar industry is Aboriginal children. I could compare the percentage of Canadian population that self-identifies as Aboriginal, about 3.8%. In 2006, to the percentage of Aboriginal children that are currently in care of provincial child welfare ministries across Canada. Across Canada, it's 50%. Some of those provinces, Saskatchewan and Manitoba, are over 60%, 69% Manitoba, and they're projecting over 80% in 5 years of all of the children in care in that province will be Aboriginal. I could demonstrate the bureaucratic business nature of the provincial ministries that have claimed to our responsible, they're claimed to be responsible for our Aboriginal children. These so-called social service ministries have a variety of names, such as children and family development. And of course, development refers to some Eurocentric concept of capital progress. Or even worse, in Manitoba, their ministry is called Family Services and Consumer Affairs. I could talk about the ongoing cycle of Aboriginal children coming into care, these business-oriented ministries. I could demonstrate the beginning that the residential schools that failed in their goal of assimilation, the school survivors lost their children in the next attempt at solving the Indian problem by removing Indian children permanently through the use of provincial social services ministries under the guise of family services, child welfare, children's aid societies, and now consumer affairs. But I don't want to talk about these. I want to talk about an idea. I want to talk about many ideas. Through our experiences, us that are survivors of the child welfare system in Canada, we can make a difference. We need to focus upon ending forever the devastating effects of the aftermath of the residential school era, which is the 60s scoop, which is now the perpetual scoop, or you can call it the millennial scoop. There are more Aboriginal children in care of provincial ministries today than there ever was at the peak of residential school era. We need to struggle and heal from past injustices, from past wrongs, and from many survivors of abuses experienced while in care. But we also need to search ourselves for what we can do to end this cycle. This perpetual cycle that witness residential school survivors lose their children and grandchildren in the 50s, 60s, 70s provincial child welfare era, known as the 60s scoop. Us survivors have ideas. I want to leave you with a couple of questions that if you're a survivor of the child welfare system, you've been affected by the child welfare system, be it residential school or the Millennium School or anything in between. I want you to think about what was missing. Us survivors in Alberta have come together. We talked about this a lot. What was missing in our childhood? You start one day and find it. It says, I'm a good person, I'm a drummer. I was fortunate, I was raised in a home where I was still a sticker, but I would never had an opportunity to become a drummer. I never had that opportunity. So I want you to think about what was missing if you're a survivor of the system.
But I also want you to think about this other question, is why are so many Aboriginal children in care of provincial ministries today? Why? Now, if you combine your responses to those two questions, what was missing in our childhood when we were in the system, and then why are so many children entering the system today? There's going to be a flood of ideas. And these ideas can change the world. In Alberta, the Creating Hope Society, who we are all survivors of the 60s group, have come up with a variety of ideas, and we've come together, we've created a nonprofit organization. We have got funding for after-school care, culturally involved, for child welfare, for children in child welfare, Aboriginally-based culture, a mentorship program. We have developed curriculum from the survivor's perspective that is being employed at the University of Calgary, Masters of Social Work level that they must take in order to get a master's degree in social work there. They come and listen to the 60 Scoop survivors. They have to take that course. So social workers coming out with their master's degree, means they're going to be in administration, have to listen to us first. We have developed a literacy program where Kukums and Mushums, where Nikomas and Mishomas are coming, that are coming and telling their stories of involvement with child welfare, but we're under the guise of literacy, we're creating a book on that. We've got all of these ideas coming out, and because we've incorporated as a nonprofit organization, we're able to gain public funding. We've got funding from Ottawa, we've got funding from the province of Alberta.
Would you tell people what this represents?
It represents, I'm the one that's giving you the gift. Your friendship is like this with me and the Creator. The Great Spirit keep us together in friendship, always.
Provincial government.
And you'll remember all of us in prayer.
And on YouTube.
Yeah. Awesome.
They're moving towards kinship care. In 2006, the Creating Hope Society, we made a declaration, and our declaration is an Aboriginal home for every Aboriginal child in care. I've got cannons going off in my declaration. An Aboriginal home for every Aboriginal child in care by 2025. The provincial ministry in Alberta likes our message. They want us to spearhead a kinship care initiative within the ministry. Now, I'm not saying we're being bought out. We're not frontline workers. We are training ministry executives on the 60 scoop, what it does. Those are the ideas of us survivors. So those are the, I'm gonna leave you with that idea. Coming together, the gathering, the telling of our stories has more energy than the sum of its parts. And we have to continue to gather such as this. Thank you for hearing me today.
And that was Steve Gold. Jimmy Rich, Steve, for being here with us today.
Today was the child welfare gathering. A bunch of us survivors of Aboriginal child welfare have come together. Your question to me earlier was, what is not just today, but was the 60 Scoop? We define it, the 60 Scoop, as the aftermath of the residential school era. So, of all the people that were apprehended, or not apprehended, but went through the residential schools, when they came out, they had lost parenting skills. So what occurred in 1951, there was a change in legislation, in the federal legislation, that allowed access to the First Nations of the provincial social services agencies. So that began, legislatively, the 60 Scoop. Now what that is a noticeable increase through from 1958, 59, and 60 of Aboriginal children right across Canada being apprehended by provincial social service agencies.
For what purpose?
For what purpose? Well, that's a big answer.
Or for what excuse?
Well, it would be the same reason as the residential school era. And so if you go back to 19th century administrators, they wanted to kill the Indian and the child. So you can think of it as a cultural genocide.
Yeah.
It was to deal with the Indian problem. So they tried, the first model was the industrial schools in the United States. They replicated that here, but they, instead of the government running them, they allowed the churches to run the residential schools. So, and each of the students that were entered in were Aboriginal children from the First Nations right across Canada that went through the residential schools. Now, by the mid-20th century, it was becoming very evident to the legislators that that wasn't working. The children that were leaving the residential schools were not becoming good model Canadian citizens. The Indian had not been killed in them.
And had not been developed either.
Well, that's true, because there's been much of the traditions was that I think the residential school era speaks for itself. There's far more information out there than I can give today on cultural genocide, right? For not being allowed to speak their languages, and yet didn't know any other language, for not being able to visit their siblings within the same school, for no traditions, not to be able to honor any holidays or any of their any cultural traditions.
So what happened then is they scooped up these children, which would be children of the residential children, school children.
Well, yeah, okay. So I'd like to talk a little bit more about the 60 scoop, and this is what I know a little bit more on. So at that time, when it became evident to the legislators that the residential schools weren't working to make good Canadian citizens or little white people out of the brown people, then they tried a different avenue at that point. So the legislative change in 51, allowing access to the reserves, to the First Nations by the provincial social services, began what we now coin as the 60 scoop. And it didn't take hold until about 1958-59. And it went up logarithmically. It went up by a huge scale, from hundreds of children within the care of the provincial social service agencies in Canada in the 50s to 59, 60, 61, and it went into thousands of children. And so, because in that era where it made that huge steep climb of Aboriginal children being apprehended.
And what happened to them once they were apprehended?
Fostered or adopted. And early, it was a lot of adoption. A lot of adoptions. But they've been really scattered to the wind. Mm-hmm. There are people all over the world that don't know their identity, and yet they are indigenous to Turtle Island. Mm-hmm. And more specifically then, legally, they're Aboriginal peoples from Canada. There's many in the United States, there's many in Europe, but there's still the vast majority were kept in Canada, in foster homes. And the stories of the survivors of that era are telling they went from foster home to foster home to foster home. My experience was I was adopted as an infant. And so I spent my entire, and today, well, here I am 50 years later, and I'm just visiting my 80-year-old dad, the man that adopted me. So I stayed with that family the whole time. But around 15 years ago, I started finding out about my heritage, and I made my journey back to my home First Nation and found my biological family.
Good.
Right? So myself as a survivor of the child welfare system, that's what this gathering today is about.
Yeah.
Right. We're all survivors of the child welfare or have been impacted by the child welfare agencies. The 60 scoop doesn't mean just what happened in the 60s, because at that point it never declined. It plateaued for a little bit through the middle of the 60s, and then it climbed up again. And when I say it climbed up, I mean the numbers of children in care of provincial social service agencies. Here in Ontario, they call it the Children's Aid Society.
Yeah.
Right. So in the 70s, it continued to increase. There was more and more children being apprehended. And it climbed again in the 80s, plateaued a little bit in the 90s. But then here we are in the 2000s, in the 21st century, and there are more Aboriginal children in care throughout the 20s, through the 2000s, than there was collectively before that.
Wow.
Today, as we stand here today, there are more Aboriginal children in care of provincial social service agencies than there ever were at the peak of residential school era.
From what I've heard of your talk earlier, you were one of the fortunate ones that had a good fostering family. But there was also discussions about some very outrageously bad fostering families.
There's many children that were lost to it. Now, I have an adoptive sister who has had six children, and all six children have been apprehended. Five of those children are lost to the system. We don't know where they are. But one is returned, and he's telling stories of going from foster home to foster home, and he was up in the north of Ontario, and he was going from farm to farm to farm, foster homes, and he was just labor, free labor. Right. But, and in fact, the foster home was getting paid for him being there, which presumably was to offset, what, food and board?
Yeah.
And yet, so this is not a home to raise a child in.
No.
But you're alluding to, and there's other stories that have been told here today about more abuse than what I have experienced. And so we have to honor and respect those stories. Those aren't my stories.
No.
Right? So I don't repeat that, but there's many, many abuses that went on within.
Yeah, I have some of that on film already, so.
But what is common amongst those of us that were part of the 60 Scoop, which are children that were apprehended in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and it continues on. Today we call it Perpetual Scoop or the Millennial Scoop or however you want to call it. There's just a lot of children being apprehended from Aboriginal communities. But there's commonalities to it. When we come together as survivors of the system, Aboriginal survivors of the system, and talk about our experiences, there's many common threads through that. Feelings of abandonment, feelings of racism. Myself, my skin being lighter, you would think I wouldn't have experienced racism. But knowing, I was told as a young boy that where I was from, and that was never encouraged. It was never talked about at that point. And so the pervasive racism against Indians in Canada, I felt part of. Right? It affected me because I know I'm part of that, and yet I'm hiding.
Yeah.
All right. I'm hiding on that. But the feelings of abandonment, the feelings of cultural loss.
The loss of roots.
Yes, lots of loss of roots. No sense of belonging.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was brought up in, you know, Canadian, British traditions, but I never felt part of that. Never felt part of that. And then we kept being told that's my roots.
Yeah.
But I never felt part of it. I never saw myself in it. Right. And so that's in the education system. You read about Canadian history. You never hear about the actual historical relationship between the state and the Indigenous peoples.
Right.
So you never, you're missing. My experience is missing from the historical record.
And
that's part of the reason for today's rally, was to bring this to the forefront.
I noticed that as the rally progressed, there was discussion that it expands beyond the native community into the general community, the way Children's Aid has expanded their abuses.
That's true too. I don't mean to defend the Children's Aid Society or not, but they actually are operating on 100 to 150 year old ideological policies. These policies, the foundations of all of the social service agencies across Canada, are founded on racialized ideologies.
Okay, we got a small change, but we're going to have Marcia come on up here. She's one of our plaintiffs regarding our case, our class action lawsuit. So she's going to be talking, and she drove all the way from Timmins area, Kappa's casing. They got in early this morning, I believe, on the bus, and she brought some youth and some children. So we're going to hear from Marcia, one of our good friends, and so Marcia, here we go.
I'll get this here. Okay, let me go to the drum. Thank you. I see many faces here. I see many young people. I see many children. I'm so happy to see them. I hear of survival. I understand survival is good, but there's life after survival. There's living a good life in the midst of survival. That's in that healing journey to be able to take the good things that we've learned through the years and share them with our children at the time that healing journey is coming. Our children are sacred. I watch them paint these signs, I watch them draw them, and to see that, that these young people know that they are sacred, that they can write, I am special, I am me, to be able to say that. The children of the 60s group, the majority of them didn't get to say that. They didn't get to live that. They got to know it, maybe, as adults, many, many years after. But as children, it is such a blessing. It is such a wonder. And, you know, and the Creator is so good to be able to have these young people here bringing us a hope that we can see, we can acknowledge them, and know that they actually, our children here, believe they are sacred. They know they are sacred. An agency, a government, they don't know that. They don't know that children are sacred, obviously. What happened to them through the years, through, you know, generations and generations, you know, such hurt. And that's the common, commonality we have within our First Nations across this country, is a pain. Survival is good, but it's not enough. Living the good life the Creator intended it for us, for our children, that's the goal, to live the good life that the Creator intended us to have. Miigwech.
Okay, we're gonna leave it open to open mic for exactly 10 minutes.
I'm gonna tell you about a case we worked on back in the 80s with the children's aid and our our children being was adopted in there. I don't know if you guys remember the Cameron Curley case. And he was adopted into the States, and foster homes he went to, he was abused by his parents. And second home he went to, he was molested by his stepdad, and he ended up killing him. So we really had to work hard to advocate for him, you know, the crisis and the situation. His plight. Anyways, about 12 years later, he got brought back to Canada to do his sentence here. But eventually, he got let go. Eventually, after, you know, and this happened in 82, 83, and I think we should learn from that. You know, and the things that the policy and procedure the government's doing, you know, it's not working. I don't see why we should try to develop our own system. You know, I'm just thinking about that, and I was standing out here, you know, and I don't know if anybody know remember all that. But something to keep in mind, you know, I wanted to say that. Thank you.
He said that when he was given up, he went to a white home. The government went to his family and said, you have an Indian child. That Indian child has treaty rights. We will buy them from you for $5,000. That story came to light. They were trying to assimilate us into a white society and take away our rights right from back then. I don't know if a lot of you are aware of that, but it is something that has happened. And it really bothers me. And I encourage more people to please come up and speak up. A lot of times we don't say stuff, and a lot of times there are people out there who are suffering. And they need to come up, they need to speak up. They need to say, all the hurt has got to stop. The racism has got to stop.
To me, it just shows us truth and reconciliation isn't just about continuing the lies. Because it wasn't just continued by the CAS agencies in the 60s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s schools, but it continues to right now. Native children are being taken from Native homes just because there's a likelihood, a possibility of alcoholism or drugs occurring. They're being taken from good Native homes. And still, even though there's good native homes where there's positive parenting, where there's no drug or alcohol abuse, those parents aren't even considered as fosters. Instead, they get stuck in Pentecostal and Presbyterian homes and someone else's religion stuffed down their throats. So it is incumbent upon us to continue to do whatever is necessary for our kids and to demand that Harper's racism and the racism of this government end. They even passed hate law legislation, but it doesn't seem to apply to us. We have to demand fair treatment. You know,
my son spent 12 years in the so-called care of the Catholic Children's Aid Society of Toronto, where he was abused. I put him there because I asked for help. I had a serious drug problem. And I just want to mention Bill 179 just passed, and they are going to adopt out Crown wards within 30 days. And the other thing I want to say is since April 1st, 2010, there have been a male and a female foster parent, both separate people, and then a guy in Sudbury, Ontario, all sexually abusing foster kids. And there's one currently from Welland, Ontario, that's up on 6 juvenile prostitution charges, and he was a model foster parent. He got that award a couple years ago. So these are the type of people that the children, your children, our children, are being given to. And there is absolutely no accountability, and we need the ombudsman to have oversight here. And they wouldn't give it to us on May 5th. I was at Queen's Park here with several other people, and the Liberal Party voted against it. All the Liberals, their extra ones came out to vote against Bill 183. So anyway, I'm just glad we're all here and keep up this fight. Thanks.
Okay, Genesis, let's have a closing song for this part, and then we're going to carry on with the agenda.
Hey! That's what she's just going to do. That's what she's going to do. That's what she's going to do. Oh, good. Good. So this is it. Can they do it on the stage?
Okay, everybody, let's start marching down. We're going to move to the end of the block here. We're going to move too fast.
Finish the school! Catholic Children's Aid Society. As most of you know, the Toronto Catholic Children's Aid Society has been notorious for the genocide practices against our people, not only our people, but also the average Canadian children as well. And we're here to let these people know that we're not happy with the way they've been doing and conducting their business with our people for 50 or 60 years. Their policy of the genocide, they need to be brought into account what they're doing to our people, and also that for them to leave our children alone. And so that's what we want to say here. It's a very serious issue when it comes to attacking our people in any way, shape, or form, especially when our children start dying in foster homes. And then not only here in Ontario, but in Alberta, Manitoba, British Columbia, and also out east of us here, in the Mi'kmaq territories in Quebec. So we've started this year, a year ago. We're back here again this year, and nothing's changed. And so we're gonna be coming back even more so. We are here to let you know that we will be defending our children. Our grassroots people here are here to show you that we will be defending our children when you overstep your boundaries with our kids. Because I know our chiefs support what we're doing, and they have also they send representatives to the courts to take back our children, along with the band representatives. So and also our community members. And I'm a survivor of your system. I was here until I was 18 years old. And you also didn't tell me when you guys discharged me as a Crown Ward. The courts had to tell me themselves. So I wasn't too happy with that. You just cut me on the street without nothing, and you gave me nothing, absolutely nothing.
Shame
on you. Shame on you. Here, the Green Youth Shelter and the Covenant House, all those places, that's where our youth are. I bet you there's about 15 youth a night there. That's from the Children's Aid Society. They just kicked them out at 16 years old, 15, and you don't give a shit about them at all. That's all I'm going to say about that.
That's the truth.
And that's the truth. And so we're very, very pissed off Indians here, and we're here to tell you that you're going to be held into account. And our chiefs are going to have an inquiry into what you guys are doing, and that inquiry is going to happen. And we also have a lawsuit against you, and you're going to try and decertify that. And if that happens, well, then you bought it on yourself the way things are going to go. But we're going to support that class action lawsuit, and we're going to deal with our kids, and we're going to defend them. No matter what. So that's what we want to tell you here today.
Oh. Anybody else have something
to say? Stop killing our children!
I need to have a smoke.
Hey there, people in the building. I'm not Native, but I am a survivor of your very system. And I've come back to fight you in the ass today with a major lawsuit. I stand here today in solidarity with other survivors and people concerned about their kids. It's time for you to stop doing what you're doing. It's not ethical. This problem that you are creating, the court's creating, the government is creating,
It transcends race, it transcends gender, it transcends religion. You people gotta be held accountable for what you're doing. Wake up and smell the coffee, because your day of reckoning is coming.
Catholic Child Abuse Society!
I'm shocked that they're not out here yet to try to get somebody to
come. Stop hazing our children that are 11 years old. Stop taking our children, period. They do not belong to your community. They do not belong in your agency. And stop the abuse that's happening in the white juggernaut home. I am a survivor and my children are survivors. It was 10 years ago today that my children are survivors from sexual abuse from a scout leader in Kitchener that the agency didn't stop and they knew about it. Enough is enough. When are you gonna learn? Stop.
Stop selling our children to pedophile foster parents.
Stop buying our children.
We got halfway through.
Can you tell me what that flag represents?
Anthem. Represents the American Indian Movement.
Hey, that, and that one?
Excuse me, coming through.
Hey. And what does that flag represent?
Mohawks.
Thank you.
They're all hiding. They're waiting for their next...